welcome. Glad to have you with us. Glad to be with you. 7 minutes after the hour, Think Tank Thursday. No sign of Kevin. But Jim Babka and I had an interesting conversation. I mean, this was a fascinating... Here's what happens. Before I bring a guest on, usually, not all the guests, but some of the guests, we'll have a conversation about what topics we're going to bring up. And poor Jim, he always gets skewered because by the time he gets on the show, I'm off on a whole other tangent. And then he's stuck trying to keep up, which he does an admirable job. So we were talking this morning about everything from the border wall to the nicotine regulations for vaping. And we started off on the drug war because I had a horrible thought, and I thought, well, I'm going to run this past Jim and see what he says. Brian, can you do me a favor? Call Babka and see if he can come on a little bit early here, because this conversation really ran the gamut, and it was fascinating because he's an out of the box thinker, and he comes up with things that, well, most people never even think about it. He looks so much further down the road that it's fascinating to have a conversation with him. He is, of course, a former nationally syndicated radio talk show host, and he is the president of Downsize DC. But we bring him on in most times in his former radio talk show host mode. And is he on now?
Yes, he is.
All right, then I got to quit saying the bad things about him. Jim Babka is with us this week. Good morning.
That's okay. My contract states that every time you do, I get a bonus, so.
Yeah, we double your pay?
Yes.
He gets nothing ordinarily, so. Two times zero.
Not even a handshake.
No. Please. All right. We're gonna keep you a little bit long this morning because we've got a lot of ground to cover, and we're gonna start off with. Geez, I don't know if I should go into this congressional research study or not on the wall, or go after the drug war. I think I'm gonna go after the drug war.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. I had this horrible thought about the drug war, and you know that I've been a libertarian for, you know, decades now, promoting ending the war on drugs. It's free choice. You get to do whatever you want with your body. It's yours, blah, blah, blah. I've been saying that for years.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. And now we're starting to see the country move in that direction. They're legalizing marijuana. Now in Colorado, they're thinking of legalizing mushrooms, these psychedelic mushrooms, whatever the hell they are. I don't even know. And I got to thinking, if we had our way and they ended the war on drugs, might we see a TV or radio commercial that went something like, "Try our heroin. It is the purest uncut heroin that you'll find anywhere. Use as directed." I mean, won't we be seeing ads for heroin and cocaine and other dangerous drugs that can be abused? And won't that lead to, you know, a country full of druggies?
Well, two things. First, we already had that country, and during that time we grew to become, and I mean dramatically grew, to become the largest, most prosperous, most wealthy nation on the planet. I mean, during the time of our greatest growth, our greatest transition into growth, we had exactly that. A child could go on an errand for his mother to the pharmacy and purchase over-the-counter heroin. A child could do it.
But isn't there a difference? Isn't there a difference today when everybody, I mean, they didn't have mass media. They were lucky if they could print a newspaper. And now you've got radio and television and the internet, and ads have become more sophisticated. And if you're selling heroin, wouldn't you want to make an attractive ad that really draws in as many of the customers out there as you could?
Well, and that's the second thing. You know, when people have expressed or voiced concerns about marijuana becoming legal, and they've said that we're going to have a massive problem as a result of that, I've asked them in the pre-era, before this has begun to happen, and now we actually have results that we can look at, I asked them how many of them, and I would ask every member of your audience, how many of you would change your habit? How many of you would suddenly start, you know, spending all of your time smoking dope instead of going to work? And nobody chooses that option. In fact, I've asked that question of scores of people over the years, and not a single one of them said that they would change their habits.
Yeah, but it would influence...
They're fearful their brother-in-law might, but they don't think they
would. But it might influence my kids. Just like the Budweiser commercial influences kids to drink beer, the pot and cocaine and heroin commercials might influence my kids to use drugs.
Okay, so at the height of the DARE era, when we had the most anti-drug education, both on air in sitcoms, the government was subsidizing the creation of at least one seasonal sitcom every year, or episode every year on several of your favorite sitcoms, and they were also running DARE programs in the schools, we actually had higher uses of drug use by high schoolers than we have today. There has been a downturn in drug use. In fact, this millennial generation has reversed course from a lot of the baby boomer, for example, bad habits that existed in, say, the 70s. I would argue today that there's less of a problem, and the education and the facts are out there. And that was a time of much more extreme prohibition, obviously, than we have right now.
Yeah, but now you would have advertisements that you didn't have back during the DARE days and the Just Say No days that would draw people in. I mean, we still, you know, people may not be smoking at the rate that they used to, but then we don't get to advertise cigarettes anymore on TV and radio.
Yeah, but we advertise other things, and one of the things that is very heavily advertised, for example, is beer, which is a much more dangerous drug than some of the other ones that have been mentioned so far, or particularly in the way that it ends up being used. And so in that particular case, we have not seen a rampant turn towards increases in alcoholism. There are certain people who are going to access these products. They're going to want these products and use them, and that number is going to be relatively consistent. What's going to happen when it's legal is that it's going to be safer to use. It's going to be in doses that are less likely to cause damage, and you're going to have roughly the same number of people use it. Are you going to have a modest increase in usage? I think that's a distinct possibility, and I don't argue against it. What I argue against is that the deleterious side effects that occur as a result of taking these components will actually dramatically plummet. Overdoses, failure to show up to work and hold down a job, those types of things will all go, crime will all go down.
Won't a lot more kids be stoned?
Well, we're not seeing that right now. And we're not seeing that at all right now. There's no evidence that that would be a problem. And in fact, we have a model for full legalization that's already existing here on the planet, and that is Portugal. They made the decision more than a decade ago, I think it's about 13 years ago now, to go to full legalization of all drugs. And they have not... They would not go back. If you were to go over to Portugal right now and you were to go talk to them, they would not reverse course and go back to a prohibition scheme. The effects across the board, including drug usage and overdoses and use by kids, all of these factors have either maintained at the same level or gone down. And in some cases, they've plummeted. All of the indicators across the board are fantastic.
How are they doing for crime?
They've seen an improvement there, too. Crime has gone down. So when you make a product something that is of the black market, and this was one of the deciding factors for me. In fact, I remember the moment I kind of became a libertarian. I was watching Harry Brown on television, and he made the point that you do not have Jack Daniels distributors doing drive-by shootings on outlets that sell Jim Beam. And so when you start to grasp that fundamental principle that you are empowering criminals by making something prohibited, you're literally creating a criminal class. If you just stop that, automatically you should see societal improvement. There will be other societal improvements to come, but right off the bat, disempowering the black market actors is a big, big deal.
I got an amusing post on our text line. Can we start the spread to spread a rumor that poison ivy can get you high so the government will have a war on poison ivy? You know, the problem with that is you would suddenly see poison ivy all over the place. It would be more abundant than ever. All right, 874-9390, the toll-free number is 800-529-5572. I thought I would challenge Jim, but he seems to be handling the questions with ease. Let's do this. We have a few minutes. We're going to get some important messages from our sponsors, and then we'll talk a little bit about the border wall. Gary Nolan, Zimmer Radio Network. 20 minutes after the hour, I'm your host, Gary Nolan, your equal opportunity annoyer. Jim Babka is with us, nationally syndicated radio talk show host, formerly anyway, and he joins us this morning a little bit early. Before we move on to this Congressional Research Service investigation into border wall, we were talking about the war on drugs, and there is now a war on nicotine. You know that e-cigarettes and vaping is being challenged by the federal government in an attempt to protect you from a potential addiction to nicotine. And what they have decided, among other things, is that if you have flavored nicotine, because apparently only children like flavors, adults apparently don't, but if you have flavored nicotine, you have to sell it in an environment where only adults can gain access to it. In other words, gas stations and drugstores and places like that, I guess they won't be able to handle, fruit-flavored nicotine or chocolate or mocha or any of those flavors in an attempt to keep kids from, you know, seeing them, which is kind of good for part of the marketplace, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, there's so what ends up happening is that these stores will form some kind of union. They'll put together a lobby or send a lobbyist to Washington, and they'll make sure that that regulation stays in place because it maintains their industry as a distinct set of stores as opposed to, let's say, you know, being available in the grocery store or at the drugstore or whatever. They don't want the competition. One of the purposes of having a state is that politicians have favors to sell. They can arrange cartels, which mean that competition is kept out of the market.
So in other words, a store that was just selling e-cigarettes and vaping products might not exist in 2, 3, 4 years because gas stations and grocery stores and drugstores will have the same product line available. And if they're national chains, it'll be in, you know, they'll be buying in huge quantities, getting better prices. These little stores would go out of business. But because the federal government has decided you can't buy fruit-flavored or any kind of flavored nicotine for your e-cigarette unless it's an adults-only environment, they have created a market niche, and these stores will never go away. They'll be forever profitable.
That's exactly right.
Wow. Bet the government didn't see that coming. Well, they never do. They never do. And I got to tell you, if I had a store like that, I would be in favor of doing just what you said. Locking up the marketplace.
Oh, yeah.
In fact,
this
if
I all
if,
the time.
And if I found a gas station selling a fruit-flavored nicotine e-juice, I'd call the police on them. Bust them. They're selling.
In a manner of speaking, yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah, because it's going to hurt me if they start doing that.
So when you see a prohibition scheme, and this is what we're really talking about here, when you see a prohibition scheme, you should always follow the money. You should try to determine who favors this and what their financial benefit of it is. That doesn't mean that there aren't people who favor something more on a religious grounds or personal philosophy grounds, but almost always they would lack sufficient political clout. There wouldn't be enough of them, and their movement wouldn't be well enough financed to do the necessary lobbying that's necessary to get their regulation or their scheme or their prohibition passed.
So government has created they've created a whole new lobbying group, and then they'll complain about lobbying and money. Yeah, we got to stop these lobbyists from coming in here and spending their money.
Well, that deflects attention from the politicians who are actually eagerly taking their money. Okay, so and we should always keep in mind that whatever scheme that they eventually create to say that they have addressed or solved that problem, campaign finance regulation, McCain-Feingold, etc., always benefits incumbents, and there's a natural reason why it was incumbents who voted for the law.
Unbelievable. All right, 874-9390, toll-free, 800-529-5572. The fence. Last week, Kevin Jackson and I had an exciting debate about this border wall and fence or steel barrier or whatever you want to call it. And some people called up and said, Gary, you lost that miserably. And other people sent messages and called. They didn't call. They sent messages saying Kevin wouldn't answer questions. which, you know, obviously that's what I thought was happening. But anyway, I discovered that the Congressional Research Service, nonpartisan, looked into border fence and border wall. And they did a study about the efficacy of that. And you keep hearing about how, well, they put this up in San Diego and the numbers of people coming in the country plummeted. So what did the Congressional Research Service discover? Quote, while the San Diego fence, combined with an increase in agents and other resources in the United States Border Patrol's San Diego sector, has proven effective in reducing the number of apprehensions made in that sector, there is considerable evidence that the flow of illegal immigration has adopted to this enforcement posture and has shifted to the more remote areas of the Arizona desert. Nationally, the United States Border Patrol made 1.2 million apprehensions in 1992 and again in 2004, suggesting that the increased enforcement in San Diego sector had little impact on overall apprehensions. In other words, they couldn't get in here, they go in over there. And we know this border fence is not going to go from sea to shining sea. There will always be openings, and they will always find their way into them. They're saying,
including if they need to dig a tunnel. I mean, the tunnels have existed.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. Story out of the Daily Mail. Mexican police have discovered what they believe to be a tunnel used to traffic drugs under the border wall in the United States. Video footage shows federal police officers climbing down into the 33-foot tunnel in Nogales, a city divided by the U.S.-Mexican border. The Mexican side of Nogales is located in the northwestern state of Sonora, and its northern side is in Arizona. Drug traffickers regularly try to build tunnels between the two halves of the city to thwart border controls, and this is the third tunnel to be found in the last month. Mexican police spokesman urged residents to confidentially report any suspicious activity that they saw, which could be linked to tunnel building. So apparently, this is three in just the last month.
Yeah, and so, you know, one of the places as well that people like to point to is the Palestinian border and the wall that's there. And they've found just tons of networks and tunnels that are used not just for, because people prohibition is a thing over there too. It's not just, you know, they're literally trying to cage in people. So it's not just, you know, moving contraband. It's literally human beings trying to get back and forth. And so these tunnels are getting regular traffic in use. There's pathways. There's holes in the wall. There's, you know, the idea that this is working anywhere is wrong. It's just flat out wrong. But there's a couple of different things to say about this. The first one I'd like to say is that a lot of people who favor this idea will tell me, they've told you, they've called into the show here and done it, they've done it on our Facebook page, that there is a welfare magnet over here. There is a magnet that's literally attracting people in. And the wall does absolutely zero about that problem. Nothing. It does nothing about that problem. There's also a narcotics or illegal drugs, a drug war, black market, bring in gangs, magnet here. And if you did something about those two problems, which, by the way, the first problem is very, very easy to solve. We simply say that, you know, we simply redefine what benefits go to who and what the role is. You come in, you sign up into this country, you join voluntarily, you cut a deal, you say, I'm not going to sign up for these benefits if in return for being able to be here legally. You solve that problem overnight. You can do it almost magic wand style. This is actually something Congress can do. It's within their power. It's completely constitutional for them to do. You could end the war on drugs, and you would take care of the magnets. And those two things would do more to address the alleged concern of people who oppose immigration, particularly illegal immigration, would do more to address their alleged concern than any wall could possibly do. And it would actually decrease the cost of government, not increase it. It would actually reduce government programs, not expand them. And when I say programs, I mean boondoggles, because the wall is yet another boondoggle.
All right. With that in mind, we'll take some phone calls. 874-9390, toll-free 800-529-5572. You can also text me on the local number. And you can get me on Facebook. It's The Gary Nolan Show, and this is the Zimmer Radio Network.
This is the Gary Nolan Show.
35 minutes after the hour. Glad to have you with us. Glad to be with you. Jim Babka with us, former nationally syndicated radio talk show host. And we were just talking about the drug war a few minutes ago and then the Mexican border. But something on the drug war just popped up. And I don't know how Brian finds this stuff, Jim. I swear I don't know what he's, you know, how he does this. But apparently, there is a new way to get high that most of us have probably never heard of. Teens in Indonesia have taken to boiling. Oh, my God.
That was really? Just for me and you. That was not for air.
Is that real? I mean, is this real?
I assume it is, yeah.
They're boiling used feminine hygiene products to create a tea that they then drink. The chemicals used to sterilize the products and the absorbance in them create a feeling of flying and hallucinations. Do you think they'd be doing that if they could buy marijuana?
In some cases, no. Not all. In some cases, no.
Good.
And this is, by the way, a lot of the drugs that we've dealt with over the years, meth is another example, these drugs have come about as a result of attempting to replace what would have been otherwise available. So the demand doesn't go away, and certain things get prohibited, and you do indeed, you know, you could say we were going to wage a war on marijuana, and we're going to reduce marijuana smoking, and you might even have stats to prove you did it with prohibition. But what about the substitution effect? That's what economists call it. What other drugs were created?
Yep.
So over the years, we've heard about meth, bath salts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Huffing paint thinner. I mean, on and on it goes.
This is a new one on me. All right. Let's see. Gary says, I didn't see any of those 7,000 caravan folks bringing shovels and pickaxes or backhoes on their 1,500-mile trek. Well, they wouldn't have to because the tunnels, as we just pointed out, are already dug.
Yeah, and when they get here, they can buy that product if they want to do whatever work they're going to do to help help grow our economy.
All right, let me go to the phones. Rick, welcome. Glad to have you on the Gary Nolan Show. How are you?
I agree with everything you and Jim are saying, but they're never going to get rid of the welfare. Never.
Well, Jim had an idea, and I'd kicked this around too for a while, and then I thought, well, that isn't going to work. And Jim's idea was, okay, you can come into the country, but you can't get welfare. And I thought about this, and I even talked about it on the air once. But then it's the next generation that gets hooked on the government programs. In fact, that's the ones that really start costing us money. That's why we have the anchor babies. But then Jim said, and I thought, well, that'll never hold up in court. In other words, the parents can't say, okay, let us in. Neither we nor our children will use any government programs. And that wouldn't hold up in court. The decisions of the parents.
No, it certainly would. It certainly would. I know where you're going, but let me just interrupt and say it certainly would, because it would be a voluntary contractual relationship. And you could make that argument in the courts that on condition of being able to come in the country, because naturalization is in the power of the Congress, they can say the process for becoming part of our system is this. This is how you do it. Okay? They can't. It's a violation of human dignity, of the God-given rights that you have that existed previous to the Constitution to say you can't come here. It's a violation of freedom of association when you tell me I can't hire someone to work on my property. But it's not a violation, according to the Constitution, for you to say here's the rules for participating in our system and for people to have a legal process. One of the reasons you have so many illegals is the process is so hard to navigate. It takes too long. It's too expensive. Though there, in some cases, there actually is no line. There's this mythical line. It doesn't exist. And when you look deeper into the subject, you start to get that. So if you made it easier for people to come into the country and get to be a part of the system, they could sign a voluntary checkoff form that they've agreed to these terms.
Yeah, it's but like they can't sign for their children. They can't. That would end up in court.
Won't allow that to happen anyway. They need that voting base. They
need
that magnet.
The courts wouldn't let the decisions of the parents be visited upon the children, if you will. They would argue, hey, these kids are...
I disagree on the Democrat thing, too, and let me explain why. Donald Trump did not get elected entirely by Republicans. One of the things that's really interesting, Ronald Reagan had this effect as well, is that there was a thing called Reagan Democrats. There is now something called Trump Democrats. I live in Ohio. Just south of me here is Appalachia. And there's a lot of people in that area that were lifelong Democrats. West Virginia used to be entirely a Democrat state. In the last decade, flipped entirely Republican. But those Republicans look a lot like Trump. And those people are crossing lines. And the Democratic Party and its rhetoric, the people that just got elected that are unsure they want Nancy Pelosi to be their leader, are talking in very centrist, moderate tones, and they are all agreeing that something needs to be done about this. And they can be tested on this subject, and they will have a hard time winning re-election if they won't do something to keep those to try to fight over those what are now being called Trump Democrats.
Yeah, but it's going to be an act of God. It's what it's going to take to get Pelosi and Schumer out of there and Schiff and Cortez.
Yeah, you're right. It's called. It might be death. That may be an act of God. You may be correct.
I'm just really frustrated, man. Those guys,
Nancy Pelosi was not speaker just a month ago. She was not speaker just a week ago. Well, it didn't take an act of God. It took an act of voters.
All right.
That's another sad situation. I mean, how can we put that lady back in office?
Yeah. Her district.
I just don't understand.
Yeah. I don't think you did it either.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Rick. Glad to have you on the Gary Nolan Show. 4 years ago, this is a text message. 4 years ago, I never knew what I was politically until I found you, Gary. Thanks again, Eric. Wow, Eric, I am sorry. I'm sorry that I enlightened you, because now you're going to be like a salmon going upstream here. But welcome aboard. The more of us, the merrier. So we've got $22 trillion in debt, and it's growing. It's definitely going above that. Is that how this whole thing ends? Is that how we get rid of all these regulations? Do you think it'll just eventually collapse the whole republic?
Well, you keep saying republic as if we had one. Republic if you can keep it, and we didn't keep it. We gave it up a long time ago. We in just so many different ways, we have something radically different from what we were originally handed. So I think we have an empire. An empire's crash. That's what they do. They become relics of history. People who are in the midst of them don't see it coming. When it happens, they tend to miss it. I think they tend to miss that it's coming, and then it comes, and they're very surprised. We're going to separate. I think secession is going to be the watchword. If you scan around the country, first of all, your listeners have very little in common with California, and there's a lot of people on both sides of the line, outside of California, inside of California, that would wish they could part. There's a significant movement to say, let's let California, and it could be its own nation all by itself. It'd be like the seventh biggest economy in the world right off the bat. And people believe this, even though we get a lot of our food from there, we get our entertainment from there, we get a lot of our technology from there. They would say, yeah, let's part. Let's let them go their way and we'll go ours. The state of Illinois is in severe financial situation, just really severe. It could go into bankruptcy on its own. Who knows what the future holds for the state of Illinois? New Hampshire has a free state project. Many of the people that live inside New Hampshire would actually like to see a place that secedes from the country and forms a truly free country where you don't have an income tax. And taxes of any kind are virtually non-existent or extremely low. And government involvement in your daily life is minimal. So I think there's opportunities for different things to happen. We haven't really had a constitutional republic in a long time, and we haven't had federalism in a long time. We haven't had the idea that states can vary and differ. So I think when the federal government's burdens become too much, I don't think all the states that have been maybe a bit more fiscally responsible are going to want to bail out all the other states that haven't been quite as fiscally responsible. And I think, maybe the first bailout happens. Maybe Illinois gets away with being bailed out. But, after we get to the fourth or fifth state, how many times are the other states going to want to be the ones picking up the tab?
Yeah. Didn't we try secession once?
Completely different set of circumstances. It was a completely night and day different set of circumstances.
But wasn't the argument for not letting the South secede that they're permanent members of the United States, and that they can't? Why would that change?
How would that change? It would change. It could change for a variety of reasons, and some of this has to do with the political will at the time. I really don't think in some of these cases that people would be willing to go shoot somebody right now, another fellow American, neighbors and friends, people they know. I don't think they'd be quite as willing to do that as they were back then. There was a completely different set of circumstances at work, and a much, much lower degree of intercourse between different cultures, right? The South, you didn't travel that far back then. You didn't have the internet or the connectivity. You didn't have friends in different states. I just have a hard time believing that we would want to go to a violent civil war with each other. We got better things to do. We got Netflix, for Pete's sake.
All right. Paul, welcome. Glad to have you on the Gary Nolan Show. You're on with Jim Babka.
Good morning, Gary. Jim, as a voter whose number one issue is the national debt, and thinks that the national debt is the greatest threat to our country. First, I want to express my gratitude to you guys for beating that drum as often and as well as you do. But here's my question. Do you think that possibly there's some potential in this government shutdown where what is it, 75% funded, that as it drags on, maybe there's an opportunity here for us to say, look, obviously we can get by on a government this size without a whole lot of pain. Sure, there are some people in specific areas we need to address, but by and large, hey, folks, you know, we're not doing too bad with a government being funded at this level, are we? And if we can get that message to the Republicans or those who might be the Freedom Caucus, who might be willing to carry that message, maybe we can get some traction. What do you think?
Don't think we're ready yet, and I think there is a pain point coming, and that is people are going to start filing for the tax refunds and probably going to see those delayed pretty severely if this continues on. So I'm not quite sure that everybody's ready for that message. It might be a little too complicated for them. I agree with it. I think we're seeing evidence of that. I mean, you know, the world hasn't come to an end. And in fact, people are actually starting to do things like volunteer to clean up federal park spaces. They're starting to organize to keep to do things that they start to see not being done as much. So it's clear to me that this is right. What you're saying is logically right. It's completely sound, but I'm just not sure if that's a message people are willing to absorb.
Yeah, well, at least we need to remember it as a reference point as we make our case. Like, hey, remember that so-called shutdown 2019? We pretty much got by okay with a government at the level it's at right now with what's not being funded. So
all right.
Anyway, Paul, I just wanted to run it by you. Thanks.
Paul, thank you. You know, it's interesting that there are hotels and restaurants around those federal properties that are spending money to keep the restrooms clean and the streets paved and the snowmobile tracks clear because they make their living on the people coming to visit the parks. There are some airports where they're trying to underwrite the cost of airport security. It's the free market at work. Jim Babka, our guest on the Gary Nolan Show, and a text message for a question for Jim next on the Gary Nolan Show, Zimmer Radio Network. 53 minutes after the hour, Jim Babka, our guest. Coming up, the Show Me Institute. They've come up with some recommendations for the next legislative session. We'll find out what they are. Text question for Jim. Jim, welcome back. It says, Jim, since Nancy Pelosi and crew are in charge of the House for at least the next 2 years, do we just do nothing? The progressives want these people here as their new uneducated voting bloc. Nobody but the American people seem willing to fix this problem, but no elected official will do this once they get elected. Thanks.
I find it odd that we've got political will to build a wall, but not political will to maintain our voting systems. It kind of staggers the imagination once again. So I think if you have an actual problem, as opposed to coming up with a Band-Aid to put over that problem, perhaps an examination of the actual problem is in order. And instead of settling for shortcuts, we do the right thing, and then we solve the problem. Now, I'm going to tell you why that doesn't happen, and that is because problem creation is what politicians use to get elected. They take advantage of the very problems that they create. They build new solutions, and I use that in air quotes, which, by the way, works great on radio when I do that. Put my fingers.
I can see it from here.
Yep. They make solutions that literally are a Band-Aid over the other problem. So then instead of having one problem, now you have two, because the solution doesn't work. And so now you have a problem with the solution, and now you have a problem with the original problem. And the solution is always another Band-Aid or a modification or a reform that almost always increases the power. So, like, in your business, if you don't do well, and this is for everybody listening in the audience, you don't do a good job for your customers, you lose business. But when the government does poorly, it gains business. And politicians gain votes by appealing to people's fears, by stoking and building those fears. So this was the issues that we're discussing today and the way we're discussing them. These were things that we were not discussing as we turned into this century. We were not spending a great deal of time on questions like this. This stuff didn't matter to us. You say, well, times have changed. And indeed, they have. What changes is that you're being stoked by new fears. Let me remind you about what we were talking about 25, 30 years ago. We were talking about a massive homelessness problem, right? And allegedly, there were people all over the place, and they were sleeping in the streets, and on your sitcoms were talking about it, and on and on. And some political program needed to be put in place to deal with homelessness. Now, do you really think the problem has gotten any better? Do you really think, like, somehow that magically just went away? No, it's not being talked about on a constant drumbeat basis by people who are attempting to manipulate a crowd and attract support for it. And that's what's been happening here. That is exactly what's been happening here. We've been led to believe that we should have much greater fear than is justified over what's happening with immigrants. And we don't have to go back even as far as the homelessness thing. We were told that weapons of mass destruction were going to result in a mushroom cloud over an American city, and we had to invade Iraq. But that turned out to be a lie. That was, again, the intelligence was manipulated, and a false perception was given to you to build support for a political activity and program that should not have been in existence. And these things keep happening, and 5 years from now it'll be something else. And I would just like to appeal to everyone to stop, pause, breathe, and start learning how to assess risk, like looking deeply into the statistics to find out whether or not there's some real new crisis here, or whether or not it's just getting a lot more attention and the repetition of it has started to get to you and your neighbors.
Question texted in. Hello, Jim. I asked this question last week of Austin Peterson. I would value your opinion. Do you support constitutional money? And what effect might we see on the welfare state by abolishing a fiat currency, the hidden tax that has put us $20 trillion in debt?
Hard to cover that in just a couple of minutes, but yes, I do. I support, more importantly, competition in currency. We actually have had a bill over the years. We don't have it up right now, but it was part of the Downsize DC agenda to have free competition in currency, a bill that actually allowed competition to occur. And that's all you need to do is introduce competition, because then the dollar has to stay at a certain value, and it has to continue to deliver value in order to stay competitive in the marketplace. And so that's really all you need, is to introduce competition into the system and allow people to make their own decisions as to how they're going to pay their debts and obligations.
Well, it all makes sense to me. Appreciate it, Jim. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Jim Babka, former syndicated radio talk show host. Coming up in the next segment, we are going to have the Show Me Institute. And then we're going to have Jenny Beth Martin talking about the wall and the shutdown. She has visited the border. We'll kick things around with her, find out if she thinks I'm wrong about something. I can't imagine how that could possibly happen.
She would never disagree with you on that.
No, not a chance. Absolutely not. All right, so all that is coming up in the next hour of the program. We invite you to join us. You can send me a message via text just by calling our local number, which is 874-9390. You're listening to The Gary Nolan Show. It is the Zimmer Radio Network.
This is The Gary Nolan Show.